Session number 20459, Reel 6.
Captain Spencer, Reel 6.
Experience showed that by freezing, if you were, for instance, seeing a rabbit slightly out of range, the rabbit would raise its head. But if you remained absolutely stationary and made no sound, they would immediately start cropping again. And this was the same if your birds were on the field or this, that and the other. They would, providing they, you didn't see any movement, you could do so. Now, I found on previous patrols, I don't know whether I said this before, is that when you had moved and had made a noise, and you could actually wait for 2 minutes, which is a very long time, if there was anybody in the area, particularly a German, they'd say, "Was ist das?" And you would know that you were very near somebody. This, therefore, if you could have people who could move very stealthily at any one of them, and you're in reasonable close contact, any noise, everybody would freeze, and the same. And this has saved us on many occasions from, one, locating where the enemy started, and two, saving your own thing. On these, I preferred a three-man patrol, basically, all of which, well, certainly all of which would be having tops of submachine guns. I would also carry a revolver at the time. This is particularly for night patrols, and obviously by moving cautiously over an air, you could probably locate if there were Germans present, and hopefully in what sort of numbers, and how they were spaced out, basically.
How many men did you have overall in your special
group? Well, in the special day, I had one of the conditions where they weren't superstition, because I'd like 13 men, which was the maximum I would take out on any patrol. The idea was always to move groups at a time. If it was a five-man patrol, I'd move two men forward while it was covered by the others. Always remembering that the line of fire is rather important, that you don't,
You don't cross the you line don't, of fire at the man behind you.
You don't fire at the man behind you, because unfortunately there were too many incidents of people being hit by their own fire. And again, if you came across the fighting centre, we had a system that the two outside people would empty the whole of their magazines, and directly they'd stop, the front three would empty their magazines, so that you and in the meantime you would have located. The best way probably is backwards, but you had to assess very quickly as whether to what was the next action once fire started. But hopefully one had already selected these points before you'd move further forward.
How did you actually exercise control while you were on a patrol like that, a patrol of, say, five men?
Well, if it was five men, again, there would be quite clear instructions, one, if any noise had taken place, and one would otherwise go forward in a direct forward direction for at the most 25 to 50 yards and then stop. Bearing in mind that you wouldn't more often have to cover more than at least half a mile, there was very seldom that distance between where you might find opposition or not. Sometimes it wasn't productive, you came across nothing, but then if you didn't find anything, you would then search more carefully to make sure that you hadn't missed anything. It's when you found something that you had to move that much more carefully.
Did you ever encounter German patrols doing the same kind of thing?
We heard patrols, yes. Occasionally one would obviously... But they, I found, were often quite undisciplined because you could hear them talking and certainly trudging, and, you know, and they'd often be in line and not quite to the same way to us. But generally speaking, not. But yes, occasionally.
What sort of strength would their patrols be?
Well, at the most, there were probably about 8 or 9 people, I think, in a patrol. I mean, sometimes it might even be a whole company of soldiers moving from A to B. So you, after enough, you've gone that far forward. They might be moving up to a position. But I used to find that often, during the day, they would have forward troops. But during the night, these would go back to, again, a prepared position.
So they'd withdraw their outposts at dusk?
Yeah, there'd be an outpost during the day. What else about the patrol? We had a lot of patrol. I can remember, if you're in Italy, there are a lot of terraces, the stone terraces and the olive trees and so on. It would be difficult not to make noise going down from one particular place, one level to the next level. So it needed a very cautious work. But I think that we often could bring back quite useful information which could help decision-taking by company, by regimental commanders or even company commanders of where our next move would be.
To whom were you reporting normally when you came back from patrol?
Well, invariably I would report to to the company commander, but because of the importance of any information you might have, it would be to the colonel, in this case always mustn't. He always wanted to know because he was the person who took the decisions, and so that the report would always really be to Masson rather than the company commander.
Did he give you instructions about where he wanted you to go on patrols, or did you make your own mind up about that?
Masson often used to say, you're in the front, Tony, and therefore you're in command there, you have to take the decisions there. But generally speaking, he would want to know about a particular area, and so therefore the patrol would be more or less on his instruction. When you're out in line, I would take my own responsibility to see what the surrounding territory was, if it was just my platoon or perhaps just the company involved.
How long would it would a patrol take? How long would it last in terms of time?
The question of it wants to be righted, the most, in my view, the patrol wanted to start as late as possible so that the level of vigilance from the enemy was less alert. But on the other hand, you had to make sure that the territory you're going to cover, you're going to get back before any sign of daylight was going to take place. So on average, I would say that you would plan for about a 3 or at the most a 4 hour patrol, or even shorter, depending on the land you had to cover. And also the territory was of great significance. I think that the principle often is if you're going to take an advance, you've got to look very carefully at what your retreat is. That you, if you're going forward, you want to know where you can get some shelter. I mean, if you're going amongst trees, that's a little easier. If you're going amongst trees, a little more dangerous because of all the debris that could be on the floors. But on the whole, I think that these were successful, and I'm pleased to say that apart from one occasion which I'll go into later, we all came back from it, in spite of, you know, the odd encounters of fire. And the secret being that if you have sufficient firepower at one time, people keep their heads down, gives you a chance to move very quickly. And if you can move in a systematic way, you have a chance of getting away before you can be discovered.
Did you ever get lost when you went out at night?
Hopefully no. I can't remember any time that we were actually lost, because you do keep a very careful line. I mean, we don't mark trees like in Boy Scout, but I mean, one, you have a compass always, and two, you make sure that you know what particular line is. Sometimes the danger was coming back that you had to the precise place, either where you had gone out or where you say you were coming back, because your own troops are also a bit nervous, and unless you could make sure that they identify you, it would be not unusual to make, when you're safely on the ground behind something, to shout that you're coming in before they start shooting you.
Did you get shot at by your own chaps on occasion?
Not, I can't remember, only once, and that was not at us, in actual fact. It was, they heard a noise and they shot, but it wasn't luckily close to us.
Were you still acting as a platoon commander at the same time as you were running this patrol?
Oh yes, it was. We virtually offered it. In actual fact, that my patrol, mostly apart from two people, came from my own platoon, but those two people from another were often with us anyway. So it was mostly from my own platoon.
This must have had an effect on the amount of sleep you were able to get.
Well, yes, but you found in those days you could lie down and sleep. I remember after certain actions I slept for something like, you know, 30 hours almost, or 24 hours. People reluctant to wake you, especially if you'd had a fairly long session, but that needn't just be patrols, but I mean being actively engaged in fighting itself. I can't remember any other significant patrols, Lenny, apart from the one over the Arno.
Tell me about that.
I'd like to.
You were saying something about an attack at a place you call Vino.
Vino, yes. Well, it is difficult to remember that, bearing in mind that there were these short advances and attacks up a number of hills, which I only rarely recall by their particular map references. And one attack seems to blend into another attack, but I do remember one particularly where we'd had a particular difficulty in mounting a fairly steep hill, not of a great height, but certainly quite difficult to, but there was a degree of cover attacking it, and we were about half company strength and D company, or rather 19 platoon, with the final assault on these particular buildings. Again, there was a lot of fire, and one of the things that I used to try and do, especially if you were attacking a building, is to allocate windows to one or two people. Anything that was facing your particular area, and to put them in such a position as that they could fire continually at these windows when you were attacking the building itself. Preferably choosing a side of the building that had got less windows in it. And the procedure would always be to get as fast as quickly to the wall of the building, and then throw grenades through the window. In this particular occasion, it was a farm, and the side we were attacking wasn't particularly exposed, but still rapid fire was made at the various apertures. And
would you assign the Bren guns to that suppressive firing, or would you
basically a Bren gun? I mean, on one occasion that I would use the anti-tank, the boys' anti-tank, to fire at a barn door or something of that nature, or if we'd got particular fire. But basically, yes, a position of a Bren gun to fire, or the best rifle shots. There were still, unfortunately, more rifles. I've tried to get as many Thompsons and McGinnis as I could, but still, a sniper was a very, very, or a snap. A good, accurate shot was still a very important man in a platoon, and I would always insist that, you know, to try and use the best or get the best. Anyway, on this particular occasion, that as we made the last attack, the Germans were fleeing down from the other side, and there were a number of outbuildings all over the place, and there were two or three German dead, which we carted away and in the actual buried behind the building with some indication. I think we put some tags on it to try and indicate where they were. And then as it was getting very dark, I positioned my men into different positions, some outside in already drunk dug trenches, others at the top of the building with a view over the other side, and two or three. And in this particular farm, they had quite a considerable vinery. And I had positioned people behind this, overlooking the hill, and did my rounds again. About half an hour later, I came back. And I'd heard a couple of shots, and four of the people who I put in this position had fired shots into the vats of wine. So the wine was streaming out of the vats with their open mouths behind it. Luckily, most of the shots were fairly high. And of course, I said, well, you know, just, you know, stop that. Well, we'll try to plug up the holes and got them outside.
What was the quality of the wine?
Very, you know, very reasonable. Rough red, but really quite drinkable.
Red country wine.
We did take a jug of it to distribute it around the other place, but I forbid anybody else to have any. Mm-hmm. But of course, as soon as I disappeared again, they must have had a hell of a lot. Very early in the morning, I was in one of the buildings to the left. There was quite a heavy counterattack came in, and because we were fairly well positioned, we were able to defend it quite well.
Was this counterattack purely an infantry affair, or did it have
purely infantry? We had. There was no, at that time there were a few mortars which weren't terribly well positioned, but no, it was not even a very large, but it was a fairly determined counterattack. But our firepower was quite sufficient, I think, to keep them in. But the people who had been in the vinery went absolutely berserk. They were obviously by that time highly drunk, so they charged down the hill, firing their guns across them and chased the people off, which is why I call it the Vena, what's name. But and again, that apart from one person wounded before all this, there was nobody wounded in this counterattack at all.
Do you know how close the Germans got to you before you managed to persuade
them? I would
them?
Say 50, 60 yards, I'd say. But there were only probably 30 or 40.
So they're attacking at roughly equal strength.
Roughly equal trend, but I mean they had a steep hill to come up.
Yeah.
And we were in prepared positions anyway with the Bren gun and other, so that it didn't last for very long. I suppose we then, the next particular was the Incontra Monastery, which a number of people had tried to attack before without a great deal of success.
This is the monastery just outside Florence, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, Incontra Monastery just outside Florence, which was up a very again perched on a quite a high hill with a wall completely all the way round it, a couple of entrances. And the Germans were pretty well entrenched in it. My platoon was the reserve platoon at this particular stage, but the D Company and the other companies had come to an abrupt halt against the wall. We were called to an O group, and from all the various outside of the wall, and I was given my instructions as to support D Company to possibly go through a hole in the wall that hadn't been breached by our troops but was a possible entry into the monastery.
How were you going to give that support? Was it to be fire support?
Well, support in the sense that we were going to go through the gap with them. Unfortunately, at that time, before, although I had already received my orders and left the troop, a mortar bomb landed amongst the remains of the O group, and at least two officers, I think, were killed and two others wounded at this time.
Was this a battalion O group then?
This was a battalion O group, yeah.
Yes.
Not done by, I think it was done by one of the company commanders. Mutton certainly wasn't there.
Was it John Notley who gave out the orders at that?
Not at the O group. I think it was one, I think, I can't remember his name, one of the Cornish officers was deciding that where people will go, so, you know, we're going to spread out around this place. when I got back, Sergeant Richard was there, and we'd already certain prisoners been taken, and there was a wounded man in a trench, and he kept shouting, and after his shouting, hand grenades were coming over the wall. And in mine and Sergeant Ridge's opinion, he was shouting instructions where people were. Sergeant Richard said, "Shoot him." And I pointed my gun at only a few, and I just hesitated because I couldn't bring myself to shoot an unarmed man at that particular, but Sergeant Richard came up and killed him instantly. Which, of course, is what I should have done myself. It was my responsibility to do it. However, I didn't. We then decided that we had to, you know, there were people behind the wall, we had to break in the wall. So Sergeant Richards and myself, we got some people opposite this particular fairly large gap in the wall. And Sergeant Richards and I were going to go in through the wall and dash to either side of the wall, firing as we went.
How far wide was the hole?
About 8 feet.
So you could get two men through?
Two men easier, at least 8 feet. To get two men through, and we'd go to the right. And we then had four other people to follow us on our instruction. Sergeant Richard and I went through the gap and immediately turned one left and one right, and there was a trench all the way along the wall.
But inside it?
inside, just inside the wall, where the odd gap had been knocked through the wall where the people were firing it. So we fired down this. There were about, I think, four or five Germans either side. We certainly killed two or three of them, and the others dashed back to the building. We managed to shoot one more at least, or two more at least, and they went through a door which was probably a good 50 yards away from the wall. So we then called our people in, and because the trench was then clear, we got the whole of our platoon and part of another platoon in this trench facing the monastery, which as far as I can remember only had two doors in it and two windows. Working on the normal principle, we decided again to concentrate on the windows with continual fire. And Sergeant Richards and I went to the wall, again through grenades, through the both windows, and then Sergeant Richard came back to where I was in the main door. We kicked open the door, and there were about 15 Germans in this very large room, a great number of them already wounded from the grenades that we'd sent in. Two or three people had arms but didn't offer any resistance. So by then we called the rest of our company, or rest of our platoon, and of the other platoon as well, in, and these prisoners were taken out and arrangements made to treat the wounded. And we then went charging down the corridor, flinging open the doors, but there was nobody in. We came to one door and there was a bottle of wine on the table, and we both shouted, "Mine!" as we went past. We went through the whole of the building, and I think there was only one bloke who was slightly wounded in his arm, was sitting in a chair, but I hadn't got a gun with him, so he was told to walk down the corridor. We went through to the building, out into a yard where there was nobody else. In the meantime, Norman's Burdens and other people attacked the other main building, and they were, you know, going through the building in the same way.
A systematic clearing.
And my bloke came through, and we were sitting on a wall in there. There was this steps going to a little church, which is at the end of the yard, and I went into it. There was a machine gun on the steps of this, but we could see there was nobody behind it. But obviously I approached it very carefully, walked into the church, around the church, behind the altar and out again.
Was there anybody in there?
Nobody was in there at all. So we came back and set up the route, and I think that, I can't remember how many prisoners totally were taken. I think something like almost 100 prisoners were taken, but we only took, from our side of the monastery, probably about 20. The rest were taken the other side, but there was a blank wall between what, we didn't really see what the other do. Anyway, after about half an hour to an hour, while we were sitting there, I don't think we were probably smoking a cigarette, suddenly a German appeared on the steps of the chapel. And we thought, Christ, where the hell's he come from? So we went up and gestured to him to put his hands up and came over, which he did. And then went in and